Welcome to the Pounce Cast, being joined by Milwaukee baseball assistant coach and recruiting coordinator Paco Mike Porcaro. My name is Matt Mendel. Thanks for joining us. And for Paco, we played for the Panthers from 2012 through 2015 before heading the coaching route. But I want to begin with you by talking about the season that was here in 2025. And for the Panthers, a team that ended up going 24-35 and certainly had great success when you look at Horizon League play on into the tournament. How would you go about summarizing the season that was?
Well, first off, thank you for having me. This past season, well, it was a bit of a roller coaster. As usual, you start out on the road for a good 2 months there and, started off on an extreme high, winning on opening night at Mercer. And then we kind of hit a little bit of a skid there for a few weeks. But we really weren't playing that bad of baseball during that slate. I know the record would say differently, but we were just coming out on the wrong end of some close games. And we were a pretty new team in terms of experience in Division One, and we were still trying to figure ourselves out a little bit and trying to find a way to win and learning on the fly. And I think you could kind of see that as we went to the next phase of the season, going into conference play, picking up a lot more midweeks. We started to figure out a way to win those close games. And then ultimately we got to the end of the season. We were in a pretty good spot, pretty much went back and forth with Northern Kentucky all year for the two spot, fell a little bit short there, but we felt good about our chances going in the tournament. Started off great again, experienced those extreme highs. And then you go into that championship game and unfortunately just got caught in a bad day of baseball there and lost a close 2-0 game to Wright State to just fall short of the regional. But, all in all, it was a good year for us. Not perfect by any means, not where we want to be as a program, but certainly took a couple of steps in the right direction.
When you look at that non-conference slate, and you touched on it a little bit, but it was a who's who. I mean, UNLV, Kansas, eventually down the road, a one-off against Purdue, Iowa, Michigan. Forget about wins and losses for a second. Do you feel like, at least in those experiences, you guys got what you wanted to get out of those non-conference games to prepare for Horizon League play?
Yeah, for sure. And the scheduling thing's tricky because you set these schedules. Wags does it for us, but you set these schedules years in advance, a couple years in advance. So Kansas, for example, who we played this year, when that got booked a couple years ago, it wasn't regional Kansas as they were this year. So you go and play a four-game set against those guys, and you got a taste of postseason baseball with them because they had a great atmosphere, great environment, and really that's what we're trying to create in the non-conference slate. We're trying to test our program, test our guys, bring them to different atmospheres, regional-type atmospheres, so that way when we do, finally break down the door, win the Horizon League Championship and move on to a regional, we're already used and accustomed to those settings. So I definitely feel like we accomplished that this year, going to South Carolina, going out west to UNLV and Kansas, and even Mercer, where we opened up. I mean, that was no slouch of an opponent either. So we really tested us, and you're going to see that in the future here too as well.
What was the feeling? Okay, the team was 1-14, but you mentioned a number of close games, especially late in that non-conference slate. But what was the feeling heading into conference play?
A new slate was definitely the message. You're 0-0. Everybody was a bit disappointed, obviously, with how the non-conference went, just from a wins and loss standpoint. But nobody was down because we still know our position. We got to perform in conference play, and we got to win our conference tournament. So everything was still in front of us, despite being 1-14 at that time. So it kind of felt like a clean slate, and that gave everybody a bit of a jolt of energy going into conference play. And I think you kind of could see that with the start we had. And that's where we kind of got our footing and started to take off as a group.
And in Horizon League play, the Panthers finishing 16-13. But how wild was conference play? Because it seemed like on any given day, anybody could beat anybody.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. When you're playing teams six times throughout the year, you become really familiar with one another. So, you start off and I think we opened with Youngstown. Was that our first series, I believe? Yeah,
it was.
In March. They were a completely different team just like us the next time we played them. And they have now seen us now. Three previous games. So it just becomes a little bit of a chess match. You kind of understand what they have, what they may not have, and what you might want to expose. And I'm sure they do the same with us. So it makes that second go around in the league really, really competitive. And yeah, anybody can get anybody. So it was a good battle. And I would expect the league to kind of maintain that, level of parity, if you will. And anybody can beat anybody on a given day, especially when you're playing six times throughout the year and then going to see them in the tournament.
I was going to say, saw that parity again in the tournament with that Panther run that you talked about earlier. Okay, one win short of the tournament championship. What was key, though, during that successful run?
Yeah, well, again, we felt very confident in our abilities as a group. Our guys, you know, I actually think, like, missing out on the two seed kind of motivated our guys a little bit because we felt like we let that opportunity slip away. So we went into that tournament with a bit of a chip on our shoulders, matched up with PFW right away, and, you know, our offense was unbelievable that day and allowed Gavin to, you know, kind of cut his start short to save him for the back end because you need arms in that type of tournament setting. And then we had a big showdown against Northern Kentucky, who we went back and forth with just about every game during the regular season. And they started a guy against us who had a lot of success against us both times and the regular season. So depending on how you look at it, you can think, oh, God, this guy's had our number, or there's no way he's getting us today. And I think that's kind of the mentality our guys had that day. And I just remember Gabe starting that day off with a home run and set the tone for the rest of the day. So beat them, and then you had the showdown against Wright State, play unbelievable, you're on an extreme high, and then, like I said, you just got caught up on that championship day where it just didn't fall our way.
How challenging is that championship day? You lose that first game, but you have to quickly forget about it because it's a winner-takes-all, what became a pitcher's duel.
Yeah, no doubt, and the Horizon League, and anybody that's familiar with the Horizon League would think that final game, I think it's, what, game 12 or 13 of the tournament, you're expecting a shootout, and it was the complete opposite. But to your point, it is very hard to put that first game behind you as quickly as possible because you have to pick up the pieces and you got another game in 30 minutes. I felt like we did that. You know, we gathered after that first game and said, hey, all that matters, nobody's going to remember how this first game went. All they're going to remember is this final championship winner-take-all game. So, you know, don't pout. Don't put your heads down. We got a game here and some business to take care of. And it was a good ball game. I mean, that was a good baseball game. Both teams only had a couple opportunities to score. Unfortunately, we didn't score with our opportunities, and they scored with theirs. And sometimes that's just how the cookie crumbles in baseball.
When you look at the roster, about 12 or 13 seniors, what do they mean to this team's success?
Yeah, no, they did a really good job. I mean, we were led by a lot of them. You think of Gavin Tice, Logan Snow. I mean, pitcher of the year, relief pitcher of the year. You had Justin Hauser, who was a staple in the lineup for years. Tyler Bickers, Gabe Ressler, Ty Glether, Tom Otto, all those guys. Caden Headley, who comes in as a transfer. They were really the foundation of this group. And I think they helped us kind of transition into this new wave because we're going to be a little bit younger next year with some returners. But they carried us this year. They showed the younger guys, you know, how it's supposed to look in the weight room, classroom, on the field, games, offseason, all that stuff. So you're going to see their handprints on this program for years from now. So I'm really thankful for that group. They were a phenomenal group of guys.
One of the big additions this season was Charlie Marion from Madison College. And like you, your senior year, he was able to battle through the second half of the season playing through injury. And you look, he hit .279 with 12 home runs, 61 runs batted in. When you look at Charlie, what stands out about his game to you?
Mm-hmm. Just a natural hitter. You know, when we were recruiting him out of Madison College, that was just the one thing that stood out. I mean, he just hits. Has a knack for getting the barrel on the ball. He has a knack for having these insane exit velos, which I don't know if it's something he does mechanically or if it's just God-gifted, because he's not the biggest guy in the world, but, I mean, he can hit with the best of them in the conference and in the country. So he's a hitter first, and he's not afraid of moments. I remember early in the season, you know, the second weekend we go to South Carolina, it's a pretty big atmosphere. Like, you could tell he was relishing it and he wasn't shying away from it, even though he was only four games into his Division I college career. So I think those two things kind of carry him. And if he doesn't have that injury in the second half, not saying his numbers were poor, but you say the .279, I mean, at one point he was well above 300. As much as he might not admit it, that knee injury affected him a little bit, but yet he was still able to have some pretty big moments for us in the tournament. So
you brought up the name earlier, Gavin Tice. How dominant was he on the mound? I know from a broadcast PA standpoint, he was a delight. I mean, every game was .215, .230 when he pitched. He went 9-1 with an ERA of 4.38.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It just, you know, you just felt like every time you gave the ball to him or every Friday night, you're going to win. So that's a comforting feeling for everybody in the program. But, you know, it's really a credit to him how he goes about his business. Very routine oriented, knows exactly what he's doing on every single day to build up to the next start. And then when it's start day, you know, he just He just does what he does. He throws strikes. He doesn't beat himself. He doesn't let a momentum swing get to him. And he's able to find weaknesses in hitters and just get outs. So really, really impressive year to watch from the dugout. I can't think of too many guys in the past doing that. The one guy that comes to mind is Jake Long. I remember playing with him in 2013. It just felt like every single time you gave that guy the ball, he was going to go 7 or 8. And it was going to be 1 or 2 runs, if that, and you're going to win. And that's how it felt like with Gavin this year.
And they're looking for consistency out of that bullpen. How, you know, dependable were guys like Riley Peterson, but then the back end, you mentioned Logan Snow when it came to, you know, coming through with a save.
Yeah, big time. Those guys were huge for us. And again, it took us a little bit to figure out those roles. Early on in the season, you have guys in mind that maybe those back end pieces, and certainly those two were a couple of options, but I don't think they really like took that role until we got into conference play. And then once we got in conference play, we started going to them even more. Midweek setting, couple times a weekend. So they were definitely huge to our success. And without those guys, you know, we're probably not winning as many games as we did.
Almost 60 games to choose from, but is there one game, is there, you know, one win, one series that you look back at and say, this defines what this team was all about, what this season was all about?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good question. Testing my memory here. One that stands out, and we didn't even come out on the right side of the series, was the NKU series at home. That was when we were going back and forth for second place. Everybody knew it was a big series. End of April, I want to say. It's only a couple weeks left. I remember we walked them off on Friday night, which was an awesome moment for Tyg Leathard and the group. And then we had two more back-and-forth games, and we fell on the wrong side of it. But even in a loss in those two games, I felt like that helped us down the road because we had him in playing in many of those, like, close battles at the end where, you know, one pitch, one at-bat, one play can make a difference, and that's what those three games were. So I think it helped us going into the second half of the year or the last month and then the tournament. But the Tyg Leathard walk-off definitely stands out as one of the memorable games under the lights at the Frank. It was a pretty cool moment.
Well, right after that series, you guys played Purdue-Fort Wayne. It was a home series, but the final game was played at historic Simmons Field in Kenosha after, you know, Franklin Field had a scheduling conflict. I bring it up because you managed the Kenosha Kingfish in the Northwoods League 2020-21. How neat was it to get back to Simmons Field, but as a Panther?
Yeah, I was didn't ever think I would be there in a Panther uniform, that's for sure. And it's also different there now, too. They got the new lights, they got the turf, they got the new scoreboard. So there was just a little bit different of a feel, but it was definitely weird kind of walking into the clubhouse for the first time in a couple of years and being in, on that side in the dugout. Kind of brought back some memories of, like, old faces I remember coaching and then realizing I'm not here for a summer ball game. I'm here for a Horizon League matchup. So it was pretty sweet.
So now we transition to talking more about you and obviously, baseball has been a big part of your life. What was your first exposure to the sport of baseball?
As far back as I can remember, probably T-ball days, like 4 years old in Racine, just going to these back, ugly-looking fields that had weeds in them, and being in, like, a full uniform and all the other kids are, like, in jeans and shorts and, like, absolutely loving it. Love sliding, getting dirty. Wanted to take 2 or 3 bases, but only being able to take one. That's probably the memories, my earliest memories of baseball for sure.
So when you think baseball, right away, was it eat, sleep, think baseball, or did that come later in life?
Later in life. I mean, I loved it, but I was by the season because I played all the three sports like a lot of kids. So in the fall, it was Packers and football. Transition into the winter, you're playing basketball and you're downstairs in the basement thinking you're going to be Michael Jordan. And then the spring transitions into baseball. So it was by the season growing up. But once I realized, like, hey, Mike, you're 5'5 and 140 pounds, probably not going to be a football player. You're probably not going to be a basketball player. So baseball is a sport where the size doesn't really matter. So that's kind of the route I went.
Burlington High School, set number of records, number of accolades came your direction when it came to baseball. What stands out from your time as a Demon?
A lot. Very fortunate to be a part of that program. I did say I was from Racine, Wisconsin, so my family moved out to Burlington my freshman year. So that was my first year out in Burlington. I didn't know many people. Played some summer baseball with a couple of the guys out there. Didn't know anything about the coaching staff at Burlington, but Coach Stoddy was unbelievable. And really, I credit that program for all the success I had later in life. I feel like if I don't get out to that high school program, I probably don't end up where I ended up. So very fortunate to have played there.
And you had success when it came to Legion Bowl.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we won a state championship.
2008?
Heck, oh, dating ourselves. Yeah, a little bit. And that's when my brother graduated high school. So that was a fun time. That was a good group. Remember a lot of good guys there, a lot of guys that went off to play college baseball. So yeah, we did win a state tournament that year. That was pretty special.
And your brother went on to play at Marion.
Yep.
Was a Saber.
Yes, he was. Yep.
You also played volleyball. I read you played volleyball in high school, and I don't mention all state. How long did you play volleyball for?
You need a raise. How did you find that? I did play volleyball. So when I moved out to Burlington, the deal with my parents was I couldn't just sit around my first fall. I was done playing football. I didn't like the practicing. I just liked the games. So I didn't want to play football, but they said you have to choose a sport. One, to keep yourself active, and two, to meet people, because I didn't know many people out in Burlington. So my buddy, who I played baseball with the summer before, was doing volleyball. So I was like, whatever, I'll try it. And I remember the first week is like a tryout week, and Friday is like the cut day, or like if you made the team or not. And I remember telling my parents before school on Friday, I was like, I don't even care if I make the team. Like, it's not that big of a deal. I gave it a try. I didn't even think I was that good. And then I made the JV team, spent all my freshman year on JV. They pull me up to varsity for the state tournament. And then you kind of got a taste of, like, I mean, you play in front of a full gym of people, and it's exciting. Every single point, it's loud. It's high-level volleyball. And so I just stuck with it. And then sophomore year, I kind of got good, I guess. I think it was just a hand-eye coordination thing and then learning the game. And then actually volleyball was the first sport that gave me a college opportunity. I didn't go that route, but that was the first sport to give me some interest at the college level, so it's kind of weird, but fun times, great memories.
What position did you play?
You could probably guess. Libero.
There you go. You had a different jersey out. Yes. Different color jersey.
Yep. Small guy.
Well, Mitchell, Case, you had an opportunity to go the college route for volleyball, but you went the college route for baseball. Obviously, you had Milwaukee, but a preferred walk-on?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. How'd that come about?
So I don't know what the recruiting world or rules were back then. I think it was like July 1st going into your senior year or after your junior year, you get a phone call, whatever it was. That first day, Scott Duffett called my house phone. Now we're really dating ourselves. But I was gone, so there was a voicemail when we got back. And this was like pre-texting days too. Like, I didn't text on my phone. I never exchanged text messages with them either. It was email and phone calls. So I gave him a call back, didn't reach him, and then I didn't hear anything from them for a couple months. So I went about my recruiting process. Got interest from some D3s. That was about it. And then in March, I want to say, maybe February, Hitters Baseball. This was like pre-showcase days too. Like, there's showcases like every day now. It wasn't really a thing when I was coming up, but I remember this organization was putting one on at Hitters Baseball's facility. So I went to it. And I know I performed well that day, but I don't even know like who was there from like college level coaches. But I think that kind of got to Scotty. You'd have to ask him, because the next day or a couple days, I had an email from him asking if I want to come on a visit. So I guess the rest was kind of history. Came on a visit, knew a couple guys on the team, offered me the walk-on spot, said, let's go.
And that first year in 2011, you redshirted. What did you learn from that experience? Kind of sitting back and taking in the action.
Yeah, probably the most valuable year of my college career for sure, because if I got rushed into playing my first year, I wouldn't have survived. I was too small. I was too weak physically. I still didn't like know the game to like the level you need to know it at this level. So it was super valuable for me to spend 4 or 5 days a week in the weight room, have zero pressure of playing. I get to watch in the dugout and spend every day at practice with Cole Kraft, who was a very good senior second baseman for us. So I learned everything from him. I just watched his every move during the game and continued to try to physically catch up, and then by the next year, I think I did that, and I was able to hang around.
What would you say was the biggest difference from what you were used to what you're about to get yourself into? The physicality side of things?
Physicality, yeah. That was, like, I always had, like, instincts for the game and, like, an understanding, but it was just physicality. I mean, now every guy you're facing on the mound, you know, is at a certain level. They all have good off-speed. All of a sudden, the ball's not coming off your bat like it did in high school against some of these guys. I don't think I got a ball out of the infield my first fall. So it was really just physically catching up. And once I did, I was like, all right, I can do this.
So you caught up quickly because in 2012, your first year on the field, I mean, you played 40 games, 37 starts, second team All Horizon League, hit 316. What do you recall about, I guess, your first then season actually on the field?
Yeah, just trying to, you know, prove that I belong. That fall when we came back from summer, again, I just stayed local. I worked out, played some local ball. But really, that fall back, I was just trying to prove that, hey, I can belong here. Because the first year, I think the coach and staff understood. They're just taking a chance on me. I'm undersized, got to give them some time to grow. So going to the season standpoint, after my exit meeting with Scotty, he just told me, like, you know, just try to embrace your role, whatever it is. And I said, that's all I'm trying to do. Take advantage of the opportunities that were given to me. I got one chance to start early on, played pretty well, led to another start, led to another, and I just never looked back. So that's kind of what my mentality was. I was just trying to help the team win that first year.
Well, by 2013, a breakout year, Horizon League Player of the Year, earned All-American status, hit 364, but you hit north of 400 for most of that season. What was the big difference from year one to year two? And maybe how did you approach the offseason differently?
I went off that summer after my redshirt freshman year to play summer ball. So that was different. Got put out east in Pennsylvania, Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, with one other teammate at the time, Derek Peake. And I struggled there, actually. But I think it was good for me. Sometimes in this game, you need to struggle a little bit to help you out. So I was away from home, wasn't doing very well, you know, playing with a wood bat and everything. I still, like, realized, okay, I'm not even physically where I need to be. I thought I was, but, like, you still got to physically develop. So finished that summer, went into fall just a little bit more comfortable. It's my third year in the program now. Felt like I took a huge jump redshirt freshman year. Did not expect to, like, have that, you know, much success statistically. But it just happened. But, again, my mindset did not change. I was just trying to be who I needed to be for the team and help the team win. And for some reason, numbers panned out. You're on a really good team, and that's why you get the player of the year. Now, that wasn't because of me. That was because our team was good. If we're third place in the league, I'm not going to get player of the year. So it wasn't like it was just me. We had a really good team that year.
Well, you bring up summer ball. You spent the summers of 2013 and 14 playing for Dale Varsho and the Eau Claire Express in the Northwoods League. What were those summers like? How did those summers help you improve as a player?
That was probably two of my favorite summers for sure. Living up there in Eau Claire, again, now I have experience going off for summer ball, so I was kind of knew what to expect, but it was the Northwoods too, and the Northwoods is a different animal. So I had a great host family, great coaching staff, great teammates up there. And again, you're just always trying to expand your knowledge of the game. You know, you're not playing every single day. Like, you get those token off days, which is kind of nice in summer ball because then you can relax on the bench. You're talking to a kid from a program out west and kind of hearing his side of things of, like, how he sees the game or what they do and how he thinks hitting or how he thinks when he's on the field. And it's really that stuff that kind of helps you in your college career. So I just remember playing with a bunch of good dudes and picking their brains and just taking it back with me to school.
There's not much that beats a summer night at Carson Park.
Yeah.
That place is special.
Great place to play. Great fan support. Pretty cool setting. There's some history there. I'll definitely always have fond memories of Eau Claire.
What do you recall or what comes to mind when you think back to your final couple of years with the Panthers, which included, again, your senior year battling through injury and still earning second team All-Conference?
Yeah, 14 and 15. I mean, I'll just talk about 15 so I don't bore the audience. 15, we knew we were a really veteran group. I don't know how many seniors we had that year, but it had to be like 15. Our senior day took like an hour. But we knew we were good going into it. I remember we swept Missouri that year, who featured three future big leaguers in the rotation. Like, that's how good we were. And we had Dalton Varsho, who was our first big leaguer as a freshman. So it was really freshman through senior class, we were pretty loaded. Austin Schulfer was a freshman that year, I remember. Brian Keller's a junior. All the seniors that we had. So it was just like, you knew. We just felt like every day we showed up to the park, like, no one's going to beat us today. That was kind of the feeling. That was a tough year personally for me, just dealing with the injury. But I just got to a point probably in like March where I was like, all right, Mike, you're not changing this. Just try to enjoy this as much as you can. You're never going to get this season back. You got a good group. Just try to enjoy it. And that's just what we did.
Also, during your time with the Panthers, you wrote a popular blog for the website, the Diamond Chronicles. Got to ask you how that come about.
Is that extinct? Is that done? Was I the last one to write for it?
You might be the last one to write for it, but I bet you can find the archives.
You probably can. I hope nobody digs that up, though, because, like, we were just being college kids. And I know it got edited by Zills, but we were trying to be as funny as possible and embarrass teammates and make our families laugh, because let's be real, they're the only ones that are probably reading it. The Diamond Chronicles, though, so I was a journalism major. I think maybe in my redshirt freshman year, Zills approached me and Greg Blachowiak to write for it. So we would do it like once a week, and then we would, you know, try to make it as entertaining as possible. I think when Greg left and it was really just me and I recruited Eric King to help me, we would, our weekly, instead of just like recapping the week of what the team did, we would try to feature a guy. And we would, like, Q&A them. And then I remember we embarrassed Austin Schull for, like, how he looked like Rob from Robin Big and all this stuff. And so we just had fun with it. But that's how it came up. Zills just got us on board. And I can't believe some of that stuff went through, but it did.
You think the Diamond Chronicles could come back now in your coaching capacity?
It should, but nobody likes to write anymore. So you probably have to do podcast format or video format, because I don't think anyone's going to be.
I definitely think there's a market for it, but... You think back, though, to your time playing with the Panthers. I guess, what are you most proud of during your time with Milwaukee?
I just think we took the program to another level. I guess I'm speaking for the class that I was involved in, because when we came in, the program was coming off of the regional at Arizona State. So expectations were starting to get higher when we walked in, and I honestly feel like we elevated it despite not getting to a regional. I mean, in 15, by the time we all left, you know, 39 wins, I believe it was, swept a SEC team, had guys consistently getting drafted every single year. So I just have a bunch of fond memories of the guys I played with, and it's really not the game portion. It's the bus rides, the hotel shenanigans, it's all that stuff. So every time we get together, it's fun to go down memory lane.
After getting the opportunity to play in, you know, three games of the Frontier League, you went the coaching route. Mm-hmm. So you had an opportunity to coach at MSOE, Milwaukee, Arizona State, now back here with the Panthers. When did you first get that coaching itch?
Yeah, that's a good question. I got asked that before. I don't really know when it, like, really started. I just remember my last year, you know, just taking some young guys under your wing. I guess maybe that's what scratched my itch for it. But I wasn't, like, fully planning on going the coaching route. It just kind of organically happened. But I just remember senior year, you know, having guys like Dalton and Austin Schulfer in the program and some other young guys that, you know, I just took a knack for helping guys. I just like to help guys. So when my playing career was done, didn't really know what to do with my life and got a coaching opportunity. I was like, that's actually kind of fun. I like helping kids. Let's try it out.
And mentioned earlier, you got to take the reins with the Kenosha Kingfish in 2020, 2021. First of all, that COVID year had to be unique. I mean, you played the same other Kenosha team for, what, about a month's worth of games and for the Kenosha bragging rights before you got a, if you call it, a normal season by 2021. But that had to be a very unique experience all around.
Yeah, it certainly was. And everybody involved in that 2020 COVID year, playing each other, I think it was 26 times.
Same team.
We are bonded for life from that experience because it was just so unique and will never be duplicated. There's a couple of guys in the big leagues, though, from that. Drake Baldwin was on the Bobber side. Brett Harris was on the Bobber side. We had a couple of guys on our side that are floating around in the minor leagues right now. So, like, it is kind of cool to look back and, like, see how far everyone's come from that experience. But yeah, it was a bit of a bummer not getting the full Northwoods experience in 2020. So I made the decision after talking with my wife, like, I just feel like I can't give that up. Like, I want to do a full Northwoods season. So that's why I came back in 21. But it was a good experience.
I was going to say, big shoes to fill too with replacing Duffy Dyer. Yeah. As you did in 2020. But overall, with your various stops, how do you feel like you've grown as a coach?
You learn something new everywhere you go. I remember when I first started at MSOE, I knew absolutely nothing. didn't know what the coaching side looked like. Flip, Steve Sanfilippo, gave me my chance there and learned a lot in those 4 years. And then, you know, transition into Milwaukee, which is Division One. Now it's like going from D3 to D1. You got to learn new things. Certainly did. Then you stay D1. You go to a program like Arizona State, which is, you know, under a lot of spotlights, if you will. Mm-hmm. Bigger expectations and pressure, just a different setting. Learning things there, and then you come on back, and now you're not in a volunteer role. You're in an assistant coach recruiting coordinator role, so now you're learning kind of that space. So grown a ton over the years. I think it's been 9 going into year 10, so it's flown by, that's for sure. Starting with that first year of not knowing anything, I feel like I definitely know a lot more compared to when I started. Still don't know everything, though. Always learning every single day.
Well, let me wrap up the Pouncecast by asking you this. You know, in your role as the recruiting coordinator with the Panthers, with the ever-changing landscape of college athletics, how has baseball been impacted? And being the only D1 baseball program in the state, is there an advantage there when it comes to the recruiting process within the state?
For sure. You know, everybody can be as cliche as they want, whatever program they're in, saying they want to secure their borders. And it's almost impossible. You're not going to keep every single kid in your state. But it definitely is something we prioritize. I remember one of the first conversations I had with Wags when I was coming back, like talking about recruiting and everything. I was like, I really think we got to build from the state. Like, and not saying we were not going to go off and branch out, but some about those Wisconsin kids that understand Milwaukee and representing the state, representing the city, being the only Division I team, it just means a little bit more to those kids, maybe a little bit more pride in that. So that was very important to me when I came back, to try to establish, maintain, and identify relationships we need to have throughout the state to hopefully do our part in keeping those kids here and want to play for the Panthers and represent the city of Milwaukee and state of Wisconsin.
Well, Mike, continued success. All the best. Thanks a lot for your time, and enjoy the rest of your summer.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
That's Mike Picaro, and thank you for listening to this edition of the Pouncecast.